It was the hottest ticket in the Mile High City.
So I sent my father and my mother and my son and my daughter to the stadium instead of me going. And that was one of the most hardest things for me to do, but it's history.
Denver hair salon owner Tracy Moore used to support Hillary Clinton, but not anymore. She's jumped onto the bandwagon of political history with Barack Obama in the driver's seat, at least for today on The Takeaway.
All across America, this is The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji from WNYC and PRI.
Good morning. It's Friday, August 29th, and you are very right, John, because today, big spotlights on the Republican Party.
That's right. So good morning, Adora.
We're taking a look at Barack Obama's historic speech in Denver, but we are also awaiting John McCain's announcement of who he's chosen as a running mate. And as the Gulf Coast remembers the third anniversary of Hurricane Katrina, well, they're bracing for Tropical Storm Gustav that could evolve into a hurricane. Already it's blamed for nearly 70 deaths in Haiti. We're also going to take a look at the market. It sent out mixed signals this week. Those stories are coming up and more, but first these headlines.
Before Barack Obama took center stage at a Denver stadium last night, there was Stevie Wonder and there was Al Gore who warmed up the crowd. He told the more than 84,000 that John McCain is a Bush administration darling and that a McCain presidency would be more of the same.
The same policies, those policies, all over again. Hey, I believe in recycling, but that's ridiculous.
Al Gore, recycling joke there from the former vice president. Barack Obama accepted the party nomination in his speech and vowed to take the country in a different direction. John McCain has chosen his running mate. He just hasn't said who it is. The mystery Veep candidate will appear beside McCain at a rally in Dayton, Ohio, a few hours from now. There's been wild media speculation on just who it will be. Two top contenders are Mitt Romney and Minnesota Governor Tim Pawlenty, but so far we don't know.
No, we don't know, but we do know that Tropical Storm Gustav is expected to head away from Jamaica and build to a hurricane potentially before it hits the Cayman Islands today. And that's after it's already killed about 67 people in Haiti and the Dominican Republic. The U.S. Gulf Coast is on alert in case the storm heads that way. New Orleans Mayor Ray Nagin is urging residents to take the threat seriously.
I encourage all of our citizens to go to work immediately on your personal plans. Make sure that you know what you're going to do.
Today marks the third anniversary of Hurricane Katrina's devastating hit on the region and the city. Mayor Nagin says this time they are more prepared. In India, it's the worst monsoon season in more than half a century. Massive floods have forced more than 2 million people out of their homes. More than 50 people have been killed, and entire villages are underwater today.
Day four of unrest in Thailand, no change there. Oil rose above $117 a barrel in Asia today. Worries about Gustav, and the S&P begins trading today at an even 1,300. So the speech last night, what's your takeaway? That's literally the question this morning.
Yeah, do you think Barack Obama did a good job? Did he lay out his plans clearly? Did you think it was a whole lot of hoopla that he was acting, as John McCain would say, like a celebrity in a stadium of 86,000 people?
Hype or history? And what are the marching orders for the Obama campaign after a great pageant in Denver? 877-8-MY-TAKE or mytake at thetakeaway.org.
The Takeaway is made possible by Liberty Mutual's Responsibility Project, encouraging discussion about what it means to do the right thing. ResponsibilityProject.com. The Takeaway is supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, advancing journalistic excellence in the digital age. More information at knightfoundation.org. And by the Alfred P. Sloan Foundation to enhance public understanding of science and technology in the modern world. You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji.
With profound gratitude and great humility, I accept your nomination for presidency of the United States.
Humility indeed. On the 45th anniversary of Dr. King's March on Washington, Barack Obama began his march to the White House. Between now and November, it's the general election. It was a historic night for a number of reasons, not least because Obama became the first African-American to get the nomination for a major party. But he gave a speech in front of 84,000 people that both confronted critics and roused supporters to action. And we'll see what that rousing means from here on out. Takeaway political director Andrea Bernstein, was there. And I have to say, you know, after being such a naysayer all week, it really was a spectacle, Andrea. I mean, just the scale of the event itself was historic. What was it like to see?
I know it's cliche, but words fail me. I've never seen anything like it. There was 84,000 people that eventually filed into this stadium. The mile was at 1.6 miles long to get in. There was this huge crowd, and it was lots of sort of more kind of grassrootsy people, Obama people, less the sort of, you know, Democratic Party official, although obviously they were all there as well. And this was his first crowd of the week where it was overwhelmingly his crowd, because in the convention hall there had been all these Clinton delegates, but they
were just
completely...
You guys have been so cynical all week. I told you this was going to happen. I told you.
Nice try, John.
Well, you know, John, I hope that you didn't bother to watch, since couldn't have been any news happening.
No, I stayed up. Actually, it convinced me.
It changed your mind.
It was an amazing event. I agree with you.
Well, yeah, people were, and you know, before the event, people were sort of, you know, they were kind of nervous because, you know, there had been all this chatter. You know, why is he doing it here? He's playing into the Republican notions of celebrity. You know, maybe this was not the best idea. People felt like, oh, we had a good convention. It was a good week. A lot of the wounds have been healed. We're moving forward. But people were worried. I saw a senior official from the Obama campaign before the night began, and he looked like he had swallowed lemons. I mean, he looked like an unhappy person, like it might just all fall apart. So it's in this context that, you know, Bill Richardson comes out and Al Gore comes out, and there's, you know, all of this swinging, and Stevie Wonder is singing Sign, Sealed, Delivered, and the crowd is rocking. And there was a point where even the camera stand where I was standing was just sort of flooded by people. It's as if everybody wanted to come and witness this event. And Obama starts to, you know, talk about his life, and he talked about his mother being on food stamps and his still being able to go to some of the best schools in the country. He talked about his grandmother, who was a secretary and rose through the ranks. His grandmother, who is still alive, and he said, you know, Grandma, you know, I know you can't come here tonight, but I know this night means a lot to you. And then he hits right at the McCain campaign.
I don't know what kind of lies John McCain thinks that celebrities lead, but this has been mine. These are my heroes. Theirs are the stories that shaped my life. And it is on behalf of them that I intend to win this election and keep our promise alive as President of the United States.
You know, I suggested at the top of the hour that this sounded more like a State of the Union address than a typical campaign speech. And part of that, I think, is because he really made a list of the changes that he was actually going to propose as part of his administration. It was very comprehensive, didn't you think?
Yeah, he did. And it's very interesting because last week when I was in all of those swing states talking to people, so many of them said to me, I don't really know who Barack Obama is. There was one woman who was against the war, who didn't like the shape of the economy, who didn't like the president, but said, I don't know what kind of change Barack Obama would bring. And this speech answered that in great detail. He talked about health care policy. He talked about education policy. And he just began to go through one by one all of these different policy prescriptions that you might not usually hear in a speech like this, which is supposed to inspire. And he began, you know, they've changed their slogan. They've sort of slid it over from change you can believe in to the change you need. And he sort of really laid out last night what that change is, including on an issue the Republicans have hit him hard on this summer, taxes.
I will cut taxes. Cut taxes for 95% of all working families. Because in an economy like this, the last thing we should do is raise taxes on the middle class.
And of course, he was accusing McCain of cutting taxes only for the very, very wealthy. What did he have to say about foreign policy?
Well, I should note that the prepared text just said, I will cut taxes. So the way he sort of said, listen now, cut taxes. I mean, he was really trying to get people's attention.
Andrea, just before we get to foreign policy, he almost sounded a bit like Bill Clinton in the litany of things that he said that he planned to do. And he actually referred to Bill Clinton and the 23 million jobs that were created under his administration, which was interesting, right?
He did. It's the first time. See, now I remember this is like last night. Yesterday I said it was the first time I'd heard Bill Clinton say nice things about Barack Obama. You know, right back at you with Barack Obama. He's been saying we need a change from the 1990s. And he embraced it. And he said that the economy had done well and that the Bush administration had failed the country. And
well, you know, one of the achievements, Andrea, I think, is that it wasn't a wonkish speech. I mean, I think Clinton, in the hands of Clinton, the speech would have been wonkish, but it was just very simple sentences, inspirationally said. He didn't dwell on a lot of statistics. He didn't feel like you were at Brookings, but you definitely got a sense of change.
Not that that would be a bad thing.
Well, I don't know. Doing it without being wonkish was amazing to me.
He did. He kept people at this high level, and he did it through lines like when he talked about the war in Iraq, and he talked about soldiers dying there. And he said, they didn't shed their blood for red states, for blue states. They shed it for the United States of America. And, you know, when he said stuff like that, the crowd just went wild. That is a moment that he delivered, a line that he delivered in a speech in Iowa, I think it was back in December, that was widely believed to have just turned things around for him. I mean, he was behind in Iowa for a long time, and he never looked back after he made, you know, that line. He also went after McCain on foreign policy. I mean, he just took it right to him. He said John McCain likes to say he'll follow bin Laden to the gates of hell, but he won't even go to the cave where he lives. And he was just started criticizing him. He said, you don't defeat a terrorist network that operates in 80 countries by occupying Iraq. I mean, he just went on and on.
If John McCain wants to have a debate about who has the temperament and judgment to serve as the next commander-in-chief, that's a debate I'm ready to have.
Well, so how do you take this energy of 84,000 people in that stadium? And I guess they had rather elaborate mechanisms for people to sign up and get more involved in the campaign. But how do you take that energy and make a national machine that's going to deliver the vote? Because that's ultimately what this is all about.
So they had two tasks last night. One of their tasks was to take those 84,000 people, including many of them from this state, from Colorado, which is a swing state, and bind them closer to the campaign and make them feel that they were part of the movement, while at the same time appealing to middle America, not seeming like he was this sort of radical guy wanting to bring all kinds of unexpected and crazy changes. And one of the things they were doing early in the evening was they had this giant map up on the screen and with all these stars on it. And they said, you should text us now. And that if you text them right then, the star from your area would grow if enough people did it. And they were trying to get areas to compete with each other. So they were already organizing right there. But some other things happened last night. After I saw one high-level union official who said that she had decided during the event that this, you know, she was really going to get on board and really get involved. And there's a Hillary Clinton fundraiser that decided during the week that she was going to become a big bundler for Barack Obama, raising lots of money, down to people at the grassroots who were saying, you know, I'm going to go home, I'm going to register voters, I'm going to knock on doors, I'm going to get involved, I'm really going to do
that was
all
part of
the
deal, though, too, and even getting into the stadium, wasn't it, Andrea? I mean, people got a ticket in exchange for agreeing to donate some of their time between now and November, didn't they?
I think lots of people wanted to see what was going to happen, but this was a motivated crowd, and it was very moving. I mean, before the speech, there was a member of the New York City Council who said, I'm not going to get through tonight without crying, and then right then and there, he started to cry. Producer Jim Colgan and I, we were out afterwards getting a bite to eat, and we met a man who said, my great-grandmother was a slave. She was alive until I was 9. I can't even process the meaning of tonight. So it was very moving, and people really sort of left feeling extremely jazzed. The Barack Obama campaign official who looked so nervous beforehand sent me an email saying, we hit it out of the park. So great relief in the Obama campaign also. They felt like they did what they needed to do.
Well, it was quite an achievement. I mean, it was an enormous event, but it didn't look like a cult. It wasn't wonky. It definitely created momentum for the campaign to come. Thank you, Andrea Bernstein, our takeaway political director in Denver. She covered the convention all week for us. And next up, Andrea heads to St. Paul for the Republican National Convention, where we should know who the running mate is any minute now.
You can email us at mytake@thetakeaway.org or call us toll-free at 877-8-MYTAKE.
869-8253.
Today's conversation on The Takeaway is supported by Liberty Mutual's Responsibility Project, asking what is responsibility in this day and age? Everybody has their own opinion, discussions, and more at responsibilityproject.com.
You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji from WNYC and PRI, Public Radio International, in collaboration with the BBC World Service, The New York Times, and WGBH Radio Boston.
Good morning. The Democratic National Convention in Denver has come to an end, and it ended in a big way. Last night, Barack Obama drew 80,000 people or more to the Mile High Stadium, and it was an historic speech. Did you watch it? What did you think? 877-8-MY-TAKE or MyTake at thetakeaway.org. Join the conversation. Dan Clark wrote to us to say one of the most interesting points Senator Obama made was that the campaign was never about him, but that it was about the people. I think he hit the nail on the head and identified the reason that both he and McCain are the nominees. People do want change, and they've picked the two candidates that no one thought could win just a year ago. So two very different candidates nominated for essentially the same reason.
Thanks
Dan.
Thanks for that analysis. And we're going to shift gears a little bit. With all this political news, the economy is churning with noisy, very contradictory numbers this week. Concerns about bank failures and bankruptcies are up. So is economic growth in the stock market. We thought we'd check in with James Politi, a reporter for the Financial Times. James, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And I gather you were taking the pulse of America there in western Pennsylvania after the Barack Obama speech last night, correct?
That's right. That's right. I'm in Beaver County, Pennsylvania, which is outside of Pittsburgh.
Well, let's talk about the economy for a minute. I mean, at the beginning of the week, very precarious announcements from the financial sector. And by the end of the week, we have what looks like 3% growth in the last quarter. What do you make of it?
Well, what you're seeing is the different strands of the economy performing in different ways. There is definitely a credit crisis and a financial crisis, and we're seeing banks struggle without a doubt. And in fact, the FDIC had to boost the number of banks on its problem list. On the other hand, the export economy is doing very well because of the weak dollar, and that was the main driver behind the very high growth rate in the second quarter.
But then, is that gonna go away? Because now we've got the dollar surging and the euro is falling away because of concerns about a recession in Europe.
Right. The expectation is that the contribution of sort of the export boom to the economy is going to start to dwindle going forward. And that's just, because of the weak dollar, but also because of slowing growth around the world, which obviously is a big a factor in sustaining exports. So those two factors are expected to hurt American exports going forward. And also GDP growth in the second quarter was helped substantially by the fiscal stimulus, which boosted consumer spending. And that is also expected to wane somewhat in the third quarter and going forward. So whereas...
But James, where does the bankruptcy filings fit into all of this? There were reports it surged 29%, the number of filings, in the past year. That's a large number.
It absolutely is a large number, and you're seeing a lot more companies not being able to sustain themselves, and companies that aren't directly related to the export economy are having trouble staying afloat, and I would imagine that a lot of the bankruptcy filings are in construction-related industries. Mm-hmm. The housing crunch is still very much alive, and there's no sense of any sort of recovery until next year, although there has been a slowing in the pace of decline of house prices. But that's not enough.
Speaking of bankruptcies, I mean, Fannie and Freddie Mac Which have had such difficulties, stock price, tanking for quite a while. In the last couple of weeks, that stock price has really come back as there have been discussions in Washington about a bailout for Fannie and Freddie, the mortgage lenders. But now, all of a sudden, the Chinese appear to have unloaded an enormous chunk of Fannie and Freddie Mae's stock. What's going on there?
Well, I think what you're seeing, what you saw this week was a realization that any kind of government intervention or government bailout of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac might not necessarily wipe out all equity shareholders, and that's why we saw a sort of resurgence in the share price, because that was the perceived wisdom by the end of last week.
So let me just get this straight. So on some level, the Chinese selling is might be construed as a sign of confidence?
No, actually, I don't think that the Chinese selling will be construed as a sign of confidence. In fact, I think that's one of the main concerns regarding Fannie and Freddie, is that overseas buyers of debt and mortgage-backed securities issued by Fannie and Freddie are going to start to unload those securities. So the Bank of China's decision to sell those securities actually runs counter to the sort of mood this week.
Well, James Politi, thank you for helping us to straighten out all these contradictory signals. James is a reporter for the Financial Times, speaking to us from Western Pennsylvania this morning, taking the pulse of Barack Obama. Now we have headlines from Mark Garrison.
Hello. It's about 27 minutes after the hour. It's John McCain's 72nd birthday today, and he's giving himself a running mate. He actually already unwrapped the gift. He made his pick, but he won't officially unveil it to us until a Dayton, Ohio rally later today. There's been widespread speculation that Mitt Romney and Minnesota Governor Tim Pawlenty are possible picks. The Republican National Convention gets underway in Minneapolis and St. Paul next week.
NBC is reporting that it's not Pawlenty.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what they know, but I'm just letting you know.
We'll see. Yeah. The Democratic convention wrapped up after Barack Obama's historic nomination acceptance speech last night. 84,000 people packed into a Denver football stadium to watch Obama deliver his speech. He promised to turn the country around if he's elected and vowed to cut taxes on middle-class families, get people access to affordable health care, and end U.S. dependence on foreign oil. Tropical storm Gustav is expected to head away from Jamaica and may build to a hurricane before it hits the Cayman Islands today. The storm already killed about almost 70 people in Haiti and the Dominican Republic. The U.S. Gulf Coast is on alert in case the storm heads that way. New Orleans Mayor Ray Nagin is urging residents to take the threat seriously. The international crisis over Georgia isn't over. Russia failed to get the support for its incursion into Georgia. The Kremlin was looking to Asian countries for a trip into the Asian summit yesterday. The French foreign minister is threatening U.N. sanctions against Russia. Now the Russian prime minister is accusing the White House of orchestrating the whole thing as political theater to boost the chances of a candidate in the U.S. presidential elections. The White House is rejecting those accusations today and says Russia will face consequences for its military actions inside Georgia.
So wait a minute. That's a little confusing. I mean, the Kremlin wants Asian countries to back them, but they're not having any success there.
It's not working out. I mean, the people that would normally go with them, obviously China is generally a friend to them. Vietnam, these are their former allies in these days that they're not against them, but just being silent, not offering the threat the kind of support that they would.
So after a lot of bold statements by Putin and Medvedev, the international community seems not to be rallying in any considerable way.
Well, I mean, they're not in the sense that that they're making a big statement, a public statement of support.
Right. Well, back to the birthday metaphor. So the Veep pick has been unwrapped by McCain, but they're still in the wrapping together because we can't see it?
Yeah, it's tough to work out.
Interesting,
yeah.
Mark. Thank you for joining us.
The Takeaway is supported by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, dedicated to the idea that all people deserve the chance to live a healthy, productive life. Information at gatesfoundation.org. And by the Rockefeller Foundation and its Campaign for American Workers. More at rockfound.org.
The Takeaway is made possible by Liberty Mutual's Responsibility Project, featuring stories of responsible acts that happen every day. Stories to read, share, and respond to available at responsibilityproject.com. Because one responsible act can make an unforgettable difference.
You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji.
Good morning. It's Friday, August 29th, and today is the third anniversary of Hurricane Katrina. We've been talking about it all week, about how it's changed the lives of people along the Gulf Coast. And if you've missed any of those segments, you can catch up on them on our website, thetakeaway.org. Patricia Doerr wrote this on our website: I survived Hurricane Katrina, but not the aftermath caused by the Corps of Engineers. I will never be the same person, nor will I ever take anything for granted. Every virtue that I possess has been tested to the extreme. People that I thought would take care of me didn't. Total strangers touched my life like I never imagined. My heart remains broken for so many reasons. Thanks very much, Patricia. And we'd like to hear your thoughts at 877-8-MY-TAKE or mytake at thetakeaway.org. And today, as the Gulf Coast observes the anniversary, they're also bracing for Tropical Storm Gustav, which so far is being blamed for the deaths of nearly 70 people in the Caribbean. Among those who may be in the storm's path if it makes its way to New Orleans is gospel and soul singer Joe Cool Davis, who comes to us now from New Orleans. Good morning, Joe Cool, and welcome.
Good morning. How you all doing out there in the Big Apple?
More importantly, how are you doing? Your governor has called for a state of emergency. What are you thinking about this morning? What do you plan to do?
What am I thinking about? Well, I'm not worried right now because it's headed toward westward. So if we get anything, it's not going to be that much. It's not looking as bad as it was during the week, you know.
Well, listen to him, man. That is confidence.
And it's confidence.
That's right. Gospel singers have confidence, though.
Right?
Yeah.
But we're not like, you know, what people are saying. No, it's going westward now. That's what we understand now.
But you know how quickly these things change. And there is just great and almost tragic irony that you would be thinking about this on this day, the anniversary, the third anniversary of Hurricane Katrina.
Yes, but if you've been through Katrina, you can handle any hurricane. I've been through Bessie. I've been through Katrina. And this doesn't seem that bad.
Okay, let's talk about Katrina. Now, you paid a very high price. What happened to you physically?
Physically? Well, I have an amputation due to some, I think, flood water or something. I have an amputation. But, you know, you got to keep going on and on, you know.
And explain to us exactly what happened to you in the aftermath of Katrina.
Well, what happened was I got an infection, which is called man-eating flesh due to this, you know, this water and whatnot and all the stuff that we had, you know, the aftermath. And nothing I can do about it because it was resistant. It started resisting the medicine. So nothing I can do about it. And plus, I'm a diabetic, too. You know?
So you really went through some tough physical times, but you've stayed in New Orleans.
Stayed in New Orleans. Well, I've been in New Orleans all my life, and I can't imagine living anywhere else.
And you are a musician. Let's take a listen to some of your music.
Okay.
Now, Joe Cool, how would you describe your music? And basically, gigs just essentially went away in the aftermath of Katrina, didn't they?
Right. Well, my music is, especially for me, because the gospel that I do, I take it to the club. I don't know if you heard of Tipitina's, House of Blues, festivals, and that kind of thing. And I was it affected me because it was a hard thing to get on track because I was the host of the gospel brunch at the House of Blues. And then I was a bouncer, what they call, you know, a doorman at MC at Tipitina's for 26 years. And due to my amputation I no longer can do that kind of work. But the gigs is still sporadic now. But we had things thanks to the music, you know, people world music and that kind of thing help us out.
Well, Joe Cool, you know, we've been talking all this week as we're observing this anniversary about a lot of the music in New Orleans coming back. Uh-huh. And, you know, some people even saying that the music is bringing the city back, that actually the music
that's
is leading the way.
That's bringing the city back.
Is that right?
Because that is right, because music is a big culture factor here, and people come, this is what they want to hear. And music is the thing that's bringing it back.
So
along with the clubs.
The bulldozers are fixing the levees, and you're fixing the culture.
We're fixing the culture, right.
That's right.
And the chefs. I got to leave the restaurants.
You can't leave.
Everybody's taking a loss right now, but this is what's bringing the city back.
Joe Cool, what did Katrina change about your music?
It didn't really change anything, but it gave me another perspective on things, but it didn't change anything.
Now, you've actually been feeling hopeful because on the calendars, on the schedules, it looks like things are supposed to start picking up again this fall.
Right, because House of Blues is just starting, where I hosted the gospel brunch. It just started in October, and here September look like they might feel a little leery about doing it. But I think things is going to be all right after Monday. Things will be all right.
After Monday. Confidence. How are other people feeling? What are people talking about today on this anniversary?
Well, of course, whenever you've been through a disaster like Katrina, and when you hear storm, hurricane, you just panic. And you say, hope, oh, you know, and then your mind, as soon as your mind is off of Katrina, it goes all the way back to that August 29th, 05.
Well, let's hear some of that sound of panic in your voice. We got another cut to play of Joe Cool.
Okay.
Yeah, here's the sound of panic. Yeah. Listen to you.
That's right.
Picking up his passengers from coast to coast.
All right, Joe Cool, we're going to wish you the best, and we're going to hope that your optimistic outlook, that it turns out exactly that way. New Orleans gospel and soul singer Joe Cool Davis, thanks so much for being with us.
And thank you all.
And now we're going to get the latest headlines from Mark Garrison, who's just joined us. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning, Adora. We have some news just across the AP wire that personal incomes went down in July by 0.7%. That's the largest drop in about 3 years. Barack Obama has laid out his vision for the country's future at home and abroad. He accepted the Democratic Party's nomination last night in Denver. He promised an end to 8 years of, quote, broken politics in Washington. His next stop is Pittsburgh. He and Joe Biden will have a rally there tonight. John McCain is celebrating his 72nd birthday today. He's expected to announce his running mate at a rally today in Dayton, Ohio. Mitt Romney and Minnesota Governor Tim Pawlenty were widely reported to be on his short list, but several news outlets are reporting that they are not the pick. We'll keep following and let you know what we learn. The military in Thailand has told the government to negotiate with protesters while at the same time dismissing rumors of an imminent coup. The call from the army commander came as anti-government protesters drove police out of the government compound they're occupying in Bangkok. Human Rights Watch has published satellite images, which it says confirms the widespread torching of ethnic Georgian villages inside South Ossetia. The group said detailed analysis by UN experts showed the damage was intentional and not the result of armed combat. Georgia has been saying that ethnic cleansing has been taking place in the breakaway regions. India and Nepal have agreed to work together to deal with the worst flooding in 50 years, which has forced millions of people from their homes on both sides of the border. The monsoon rains are hampering a huge relief operation in the Indian state of Bihar. More than 50 people have been killed there.
That sounds dreadful. In India.
It's a big operation. They got to move millions of people out.
At least 2 million people are reporting earlier.
That's what they're looking at.
Thank you, Mark.
The Takeaway is made possible by Liberty Mutual's Responsibility Project, encouraging discussion about what it means to do the right thing. ResponsibilityProject.com.
This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry.
And I'm Adora Udoji.
On John McCain's 72nd birthday, we've gone from what appeared to be a reasonable consensus to wild speculation. It's supposed to be the case that John McCain will announce his running mate at a rally in Dayton, Ohio, later today. Up until the last hour, speculation was centered on Mitt Romney and Minnesota Governor Tim Pawlenty. Now the consensus seems to be moving away from that, but we have no specific details. Elizabeth Buemler reports on the McCain campaign for our partners, the New York Times. She joins us on the phone from Washington. Elizabeth, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Well, a lot of change. Last time we spoke with you, you were mentioning the importance of delivering Michigan and how Romney could conceivably do that. It appears that at least some of the networks are reporting that Romney is not going to be the pick. What has slid here?
Well, you know, it just shows that nobody knew anything. Assuming Romney's not the pick, we haven't confirmed that, but it doesn't look like it. We certainly know that Tim Pawlenty is not the pick. He said as much this morning on his radio show in Minnesota. I've never seen a morning like this. This totally wild speculation. There was, you know, the networks reporting that a chartered plane from Anchorage landed near Dayton this morning, nobody knows who's on it. Then we hear that actually it's Ridge. Well, no, it's not Tom Ridge. We're eliminating people right and left. Theoretically, that means that could it be that Joe Lieberman, who would set, you know, to set the convention on fire in terms of the reaction, the negative reaction from social conservatives? I have to tell you, I have no idea. I mean, the people I spoke to in the McCain campaign or close to it yesterday were, everybody was coalescing around Pawlenty. So I think the one thing you can say is that the McCain campaign, which is not the most disciplined of campaigns, at least not until recently, has succeeded in keeping this a total secret.
Well, and on the other side, you know, McCain is keeping this pretty close to his chest. As you said yesterday, it was likely to be a very personal decision of his. Let's go back to the Alaska detail that you mentioned. This is a jet from Anchorage, Alaska. We don't know who's on it, but certainly the name is floating around of the governor of Alaska, Sarah Palin.
Right. Again, I mean, this is seems very odd. She has been governor for less than 2 years. If he wants somebody, he said repeatedly he could step into the job of commander in chief should something happen to him, and he's 72 years old. This is very strange. On the other hand, she is a anti-abortion rights, so she would be very acceptable to the base, and she's a woman. Aside from that, I find it very puzzling if this in fact is the case.
Well, just some details about her. First female governor of Alaska, as you say, she opposes same-sex marriage and belongs to something called Feminists for Life. So, meets some aspects of the theoretical profile that we were discussing yesterday, but not others.
Right, and the Democrats would have a field day with this after the Republicans are accusing, Obama of not being ready for the presidency, and then you have you have her up against Joe Biden, who has been a long time expert in foreign policy, chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations. That debate would be quite something between the two of them.
There's one good thing we can say about this, Elizabeth. We're going to know in about 3 hours. Elizabeth Buehmiller from the New York Times. That's right. Thank you very much for joining us. She covers the campaign of John McCain for our partners, the New York Times.
Today's conversation on The Takeaway is supported by Liberty Mutual's Responsibility Project, a forum for examining the decisions that confront people trying to do the right thing. Discussions and more at responsibilityproject.com.
You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji from Public Radio International and WNYC in collaboration with the BBC World Service, The New York Times, and WGBH Radio Boston.
Good morning. On this Friday, August 29th, we have the very latest headlines for you. Mark Garrison has joined us. He's sitting in for Femi Oke. Hey, Mark.
Hello, Adora. Thank you. It's 12 minutes before the hour. Forecasters say Tropical Storm Gustav could develop into a hurricane today. Right now, it's centered near Jamaica and expected to move back over open water, headed towards the Cayman Islands. The former Bosnian Serb leader, Radovan Karadzic, is due to make his second appearance before the International War Crimes Tribunal in The Hague today. Karadzic will be asked to enter a plea to charges of genocide, war crimes, and crimes against humanity. Officials in South Ossetia say Russia intends to absorb the breakaway Georgian province. South Ossetia's parliamentary speaker says it was discussed earlier this week in Moscow with Russian President Dmitry Medvedev. In West Virginia, one worker is missing and a second injured in an explosion at an insecticide plant just west of Charleston. The explosion has forced thousands of local residents to seek shelter. It sent a fireball hundreds of feet in the air, which ignited some waste. AAA is projecting a slight decrease in the number of Americans traveling this holiday weekend. More than 34 million people will travel 50 miles or more from home. Most will be going by car. I am not among them because I am working this weekend and I don't own a car because it's quite a hassle in New York.
Oh, good. Thanks for sharing. Really, that was so beautiful. Wow. Doesn't have a car.
Now we know what Mark is up to this weekend.
All right. Happy Labor Day weekend, Mark. So if you were up last night watching Barack Obama's speech, what did you take away from the historic speech in the stadium? Was it hype or history? You can let us know at 877-8-MY-TAKE, just like this.
Hi, my name is Diane Dalmeida. I'm from Boston. I watched the Obama speech. I thought it was absolutely thrilling. I was a little bit afraid because there were lots of promises. I'm 60 years old. I've seen a lot of politicians. And I do get inspired by speeches like that. And I do love him. I, I, I'll go all the way with him, but I was a little bit worried just because of my age, and I've seen what happens. I still think it was one of the most amazing speeches. Thanks a lot. Bye.
Thanks for that, Diane. 877-8-MY-TAKE. Let's hear from you.
And now we're going to go back to Denver and that historic speech by Barack Obama. 86,000 people, or somewhere around there, jammed into Mile High Stadium, but in much smaller venues across the country they were cheering, too. Here's Hair Works Salon in Denver's Five Points neighborhood. We're taking a look from two very different vantage points. Takeaway correspondent and Essence Magazine senior editor Patrick Henry Bass was at the salon. And Takeaway political director Andrea Bernstein was at the stadium. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
And Patrick, tell us a little bit about where you were. Set the scene.
Well, I think Hair Works was really the place to be. Hair Works is in the Five Point section of Denver. It's a historically African-American neighborhood. And the owner of the shop, Tracy Moore, she keeps that shop open from 8 to 8 on Thursdays. And although she had tickets to go to the Mile High Stadium for the Obama speech, she decided not to do that. She decided to keep it open for her customers, and she decided to get a television so everybody could watch the speech. It was pretty poignant because most of these ladies are average, ordinary workers, exactly the type of people that Barack Obama talked about in the speech. And I was really struck because although Tracy had the opportunity to go to the stadium, she decided not to. Let's listen to what she has to say.
So I sent my father and my mother and my son and my daughter to the stadium instead of me going. And that was one of the most hardest things for me to do, but it's history. And to this day, 45 years ago, my son would not be able to be there, but he's there today.
Patrick, she says that with so much emotion.
Oh, Adora, it was a packed house, first of all. A lot of women who had, you know, several jobs. I talked to someone who was a nurse who, you know, also did hair at the salon. There was a retired school teacher who, you know, had a daughter there who had a second job. I mean, so that was sort of concurrent throughout, you know, all of my discussions with the people that they were working two or three jobs. They were trying to take care of house payments and car payments. And they really wanted to hear what Barack Obama had to say. These were some of the most politically astute people I've met during this entire campaign. So they were listening to the speech with a great deal of intensity, especially about issues like the war in Iraq and about the economy and especially health care. Let's listen to what one of the ladies had to say.
Talked about health care, that's one of the main things that I'm concerned with because, you know, I have kids with asthma and eczema and families with diabetes. And so when I went into nursing, I'm a big advocate of we need to start doing preventative things.
What else resonated with them, Patrick?
A lot resonated with them. I mean, just Michelle Obama, when she popped up, I mean, the audience burst into complete applause. The whole notion of the Second Amendment and the AK-47s, also personal responsibility was a huge theme throughout the evening. Anytime he talked about personal responsibility, they just burst into applause. Like, let's listen to a little bit of Barack Obama talking about that.
But we must also admit that programs alone can't replace parents, that government can't turn off the television and make a child do her homework, that fathers must take more responsibility to provide love and guidance to their children.
Here's something that's really interesting is that people, I think, in general have this perception that African-Americans are just wholesale backing Barack Obama, almost regardless of what he says. But you certainly didn't find that last night at the hair salon, did you?
Absolutely not. First of all, most of the people there were first Hillary supporters. I mean, it only changed with the February 5th caucus here in Denver. So there were people who were independents. There were people who were conservatives. There was one woman who's still on the fence about Barack Obama and said that she was still seriously considering voting for McCain. What was interesting that, you know, after the speech was over, there was a great deal of applause, but Tracy Moore, who was the most activist person there, her response to the speech sort of surprised me. Let's listen.
I think he could have gave me something just more to sell him. He just didn't sell. I don't think he's going to sell to the American people. I think he did an excellent job, but there's something that I just think I wanted to hear more, and I just don't know what it is. I can't say right now because I just finished it, but I think he did a good job, but he just needed something more.
Patrick, she doesn't sound sold at all.
No, Adora, I was stunned. I was stunned. And then the debate started in the beauty salon with her workers and other people. They were like, come on, he did great. And, the expectations of the speech were so high. And, I think he did everything that he was supposed to do. And the only criticism that they had was about the music. They didn't like the closing act.
What do you think the skepticism is about, Patrick? I mean, it's really interesting.
John, she poured her heart into this evening, buying a television for everybody to watch. She's registered 20 people to vote. She had, she has plans to register more people to vote. I was stunned that she had that response, And again, there was
Is it about her thinking that the American people need something more to buy an African-American president?
You hit the nail on the head. I mean, but this woman is like the salt of the earth. I mean, she's a real activist, attractive woman. She's a working mom, and I just think that she came into it with a great deal of expectations. And I think that because of my presence, I was there, recording her. I think that she was doing it both for me and for her shop. But the shop was overwhelmed by this speech. I mean, tons of applause. Everybody had on Barack Obama T-shirts and Barack Obama buttons. There was a little girl there that had a T-shirt that said "Born to Lead." I mean, it was rapturous. So again, when she had that response, it was sort of like she was a Debbie Downer,
Debbie Downer. Well, now that we've come to the end of the Democratic convention there in Denver, Patrick, what would you say are your overall impressions of the week?
Oh, wow. I mean, it started out with a great deal of tension. What will Bill or Hill do? There was a sense of nervousness throughout the air, I felt. And then I felt that, by the time that Bill and Hill spoke, I felt that both of them knocked it out the park. They both hit home runs. And I think that Barack Obama has poised the Democratic Party in a new direction and a wonderful way to move forward. Right now, I think it's his to lose.
Well, Patrick Henry Bass wrote the book on Dr. King's speech 45 years ago. Maybe you have another book in you, huh? Huh, Patrick?
I think so.
All right.
I think so.
Get working on it. Thanks so much for joining us.
And we're going to keep that recording, that prediction. Patrick Henry Bass, thank you.
Barack Obama. 80,000 people came to Mile High Stadium last night. Tens of thousands more watched from their homes. If you watched, was it Hyper History? 877-8MYTAKE or mytake@thetakeaway.org.
I'm Iris from New York, and I have Obama fatigue. I am just so sick and tired of listening to this man speak. I heard a lot of generic reasons throughout this week why once you vote for a Democrat, I am a Democrat, and yet for the first time in my life, I will be voting for McCain.
A contrarian, Iris. She should be happy then. The attention is moving to McCain. Lots of rumors flying about McCain's vice presidential announcement expected to come anytime now.
And here's our takeaway for today.
Well, I've been in New Orleans all my life, and I can't imagine living anywhere else.
That was gospel and soul singer Joe Cool Davis.
3 years since Katrina. We've been talking all week about how Katrina has changed the lives of Gulf Coast residents. You can hear the voices of people affected by Katrina all on thetakeaway.org. I'm John Hockenberry.
And I'm Adora Udoji, and this is The Takeaway.
The Takeaway is supported by the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, advancing journalistic excellence in the digital age. More information at knightfoundation.org. The Rockefeller Foundation and its campaign for American workers. More at rockfound.org. And by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. This is The Takeaway.
Obama in primetime.
On November 4th, we must stand up and say, 8 is enough.
8 is enough to fill our lives with love.
La, 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 la. The TV series 8 is Enough was canceled in 1981. Barack Obama wants to cancel the Republican Party's hold on the White House in 2008. He took a big step last night. Did you know that 8 is Enough star Dick Van Patten is a McCain supporter? You do now. It's The Takeaway.
All across America, this is The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji from WNYC and PRI.
Good morning. It's Friday, August 29th. And John, can you just make me one tiny itsy-bitsy little favor?
What?
Will you never sing on this show?
Oh, okay. Well, all right. But Dick Van Patten did give McCain $2,000.
Oh, I wasn't. Yeah, I wasn't commenting really, on that yeah. anyway whatsoever.
Yeah. Because I'll
today,
never sing again.
We are going to talk never. About Happy Barack birth. Obama and... Today we're going to talk about Barack Obama and the history he made. We have a report from Denver, and all eyes now today, Friday the 29th, are going to turn to Senator John McCain as people await his announcement of who he has chosen as a running mate. We'll also take
birthday.
A look at how McCain says he'll fix the economy on his 72nd birthday.
And the
deadly tropical storm Gustav. This is the serious story. Nearly 60 are dead in Haiti, and it could be heading to the Gulf Coast at hurricane strength. Those stories and more, but first we have some headlines.
More than 80,000 people packed into the Mile High Stadium in Denver last night to hear Barack Obama say these words.
With profound gratitude and great humility, I accept your nomination for presidency of the United States.
It was a 43-minute speech in front of a rousing crowd. Obama and Joe Biden now join the crush of people leaving Denver as the DNC wraps up. They head to Pittsburgh for a rally tonight. John McCain will reveal who he's chosen as his running mate around lunchtime today at a rally in Dayton, Ohio. Reports are just out that it could be Alaska Governor Sarah Palin. No confirmation. The GOP kicks off its convention in Minneapolis on Monday.
Tropical storm Gustav is heading away from Jamaica this morning and is expected to reach the Cayman Islands at hurricane strength later today. The storm's exact path is not known, but the Gulf Coast is bracing for Gustav. New Orleans Mayor Ray Nagin says he'll call for an evacuation if Gustav hits Category 3 status in the next 3 days.
We are better prepared this time. We have better coordination between agencies, and we are ready.
This on the third anniversary of Katrina's devastating hit on the region. Personal incomes plunged last month more than 0.5%. That's the biggest drop in almost 3 years and a much sharper decline than analysts expected. And consumer spending slowed significantly in July as Americans spent the last of their rebate checks. That's at least what economists are supposing. The markets are reacting. They're headed for a lower opening today.
Radovan Karadzic refused to enter a plea at the war crimes trial in The Hague. Oil rose above $117 a barrel in Asia today. Worries about Gustav. The S&P opens trading at 1,300 even. What did you think of Barack Obama's speech last night? That's the takeaway. 877-8-MY-TAKE. We've been getting raves and also Obama fatigue this morning.
The Takeaway is made possible by Liberty Mutual's Responsibility Project, encouraging discussion about what it means to do the right thing. ResponsibilityProject.com. The Takeaway is supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, advancing journalistic excellence in the digital age. More information at knightfoundation.org. And by the Alfred P. Sloan Foundation, to enhance public understanding of science and technology in the modern world. You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji.
The change we need doesn't come from Washington. Change comes to Washington. Change happens. Change happens because the American people demand it, because they rise up and insist on new ideas and new leadership, a new politics for a new time.
The time was last night. The place was Mile High Stadium in Denver, 80,000 people. The Denver Broncos play there, but Obama was rocking the house as he accepted the nomination for the Democratic Party for president, the first African-American ever to get the nomination of a major party. The Obama campaign chose this stadium so it could include more people in the event, and it seemed to work. 80,000 people from top to bottom. So we decided to take a look at the cross-section of America that was in that stadium. Chicago Public Radio's Ben Calhoun is covering the convention for us, along with Takeaway political director Andrea Bernstein, in very different places in the stadium. Andrea, you were on the floor with the delegates, right?
I was on the floor in sort of what you would call the Democratic Convention part of the area, which was dwarfed. I mean, the Democratic Convention was big, but not as big as Mile High Stadium, which is huge. And I have never been to a political rally of this size.
Well, we sent you down to we had you on the floor, and we had Ben Calhoun. Where were you? You were at a quite different location, Ben, right?
Yeah, I was actually in section 507, if you want to be specific. It was the upper deck. Like, it was pretty much as far up as you could go. You went to these steel steps that just sort of went up and up and up, and it, you know, it was one of those situations where you felt like you were looking down and you might at any moment sort of teeter over and fall
a mile
down all
over,
three decks.
A mile high.
Well, what I'd love, yeah, exactly. What I'd love for both of you to do is, and you could start, Andrea, is give us a sense of how the crowd changed as you went from sort of ground zero, the center of the action there, all the way up to the nosebleeds. Andrea?
Everybody was on the floor. I mean, everybody came from the convention, all of the governors and the senators and the elected officials. They were all crowded in, and Jesse Jackson was there, and the Reverend Al Sharpton was there, and Cory Booker, the mayor of Newark, was there, sort of representing the new black politics. I mean, it was just a scene. Everybody, sort of all this continuity of African-American politics was there on the ground. But the interesting thing about the whole structure of this event is that the actual sort of party part was dwarfed by all the people around. And it was sort of the kind of physical manifestation of the argument of the Barack Obama campaign that we aren't going to just be the same thing. We're going to bring all of these new people in. And Obama, in his speech, even managed to sort of link the kind of criticisms of him as being other to the sense of, you know, let's bring all these new people in and change people's expectations.
I get it. I realize that I'm not the likeliest candidate for this office. I don't fit the typical pedigree, and I haven't spent my career in the halls of Washington. But I stand before you tonight because all across America, something is stirring. What the naysayers don't understand is that this election has never been about me. It's about you.
So did the U's up there in Section 504 get that? I gather there weren't a lot of mayors up there with you, Ben.
No, you know, Al Sharpton was not making the rounds up there, and George Stephanopoulos was nowhere to be seen. What I was struck by up in the 500 levels was just that, you know, there was this common story that people had up there of feeling like they had to be there last night. I talked to people. The one woman had walking pneumonia, and she had driven from Albuquerque to be there. There was a young man. I've got a clip here of a young man named Elias Fulmore, who's from Atlanta. He's 30 years old, and he traveled by himself from Atlanta to be there last night, and he just said that he felt like he had to go.
I just had to come see it. I just had to be here, you know?
All the way up here, I mean, you can see him on the TVs, but looking at him, all you can really see is the shirt. Mm-hmm. You can see his face. Why did you want to be here as opposed to watching it on TV?
Okay, because I've seen him on TV before, and like, I'm not caught up in celebrity or whatever. It really isn't about, like, what he said is so corny, but it's true that it ain't about him. It's about seeing a bunch of people from a bunch of different walks of life all sharing in the moment. And to me, I actually like that I sat in the nosebleeds personally. I preferred it because I got to sit way, way in the back and just watch the whole thing happen, you know?
Was there a lot of camaraderie in that section? And, you know, we've heard reports that, you know, all over the place, people were kind of locking arms and sort of, you know, gathering together and making new friends all over the place.
Yeah, and that was what a lot of people described afterwards. They said that what they were going to remember about the event itself was the feeling of community in the stadium, which was, you know, that's what I was curious about, is whether that would disintegrate once you got up to those upper levels. I mean, right down on the floor where everybody's packed, it seems like, you know, it makes sense for everybody to feel like they're together and sort of doing this thing together. But once you get that far away and Barack Obama is this little tiny speck in the middle of this big stadium.
Ben, I have a question for you, Ben, which is, mm-hmm. I've covered several conventions myself, both Republican and Democrats, and I have to say I was absolutely struck, just so struck by the crowds, which were all ages and all races. I don't ever recall seeing as diverse a group at a convention event in the 15 years that I've been a journalist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you saw that definitely in the upper level, I would say, you know, both in terms of age, in terms of race, and lots of people remarked on that and it being an element to that feeling of community and this feeling of what was happening, you know, sort of within the Democratic Party and around this candidate last night.
And that's something that a stadium can do. I mean, a stadium, if you've ever been to a football game, you know, people are doing the wave, and they were doing the wave last night. You have 80,000 people all focused in on this one stage. It can create a sense of community. And that is something that the Obama campaign was really trying to do at this event, to use everybody there and to leave with a sense of sort of unity of purpose, because their whole campaign strategy depends on people like the people in that stadium going out and getting people to go and vote. That is how they plan to win this campaign. And when people ask them about the swing voters and the equations of the past, they keep saying, we're upending the apple cart. We're changing the formula.
Right, well, they've got to get some work out of these people. So do you have any other voices from the people that you met, either you, Andrea, or Ben?
Yeah, you know, I've actually got this other woman. This was the other big theme. Her name was Cynthia Woolen Allen. She was from Dallas. She was actually a Clinton supporter until the primary, you know, was decided. But she, you know, was on the fence about coming to the event. And then she just made a decision very recently and said that she had to be there. And she was talking about it within the context of history.
I'm just ecstatic. I'm elated. I think he did everything necessary to show all people, not just Democrats, Republicans, and Independents, but all people that this is our world.
Why did you want to be here tonight? Why not watch it at home on television?
Man, let me tell you. Just, I was the fireworks before they started, okay? I cried, I cheered, I laughed. I even led a cheer. It was just that we were living Dr. King's dream on today.
Now, you say living Dr. King's dream. When did you think this day was going to come?
I didn't think it would come in my lifetime, and I'm almost 50. So to realize it today and be a part of that today, just electrified and know that God still lives.
Oh, she's great. What's her name?
Cynthia Woolen Allen.
Cynthia Woolen. All right. Yo, Cynthia, man. I bet the McCain campaign, or the, excuse me, the Obama campaign gets some work out of her.
I'm sure.
You know, and also this thing about her age, 50. I mean, it's, you know, there was, you know, much sort of in the undercurrent about the 45th anniversary of the King speech. Obama was two then. So it's sort of like his lifetime has sort of brought around this, you know, sort of seismic shift in perceptions, I think, in both the African-American community and the white, you know, white population about what can happen in America. It's a different time now.
Andrea, quick question for you. I spoke to someone who's sort of in the Obama circle, and they were quite pleased with the way that the evening ended up. And what did you find?
That I found that also. I mean, there seemed to be great relief, great anxiety, but he seemed to do all the things they felt he needed to do, which was answer his critics, inoculate himself for some of the criticisms that are no doubt coming next week from St. Paul with the Republicans, and at the same time rally his supporters, including the Clinton supporters, to a sense of common purpose. And I was asking people there, are you a Clinton delegate? Are you Obama delegate? And one gentleman from Ohio said, what are you talking about? We're all Obama delegates now.
Well, you know, it's a formidable achievement. It was an event that didn't look like a celebrity event. It was inclusive. It wasn't wonkish. And it definitely left the impression that this campaign is about more than just some activists in Denver. Andrea Bernstein
and
Ben Calhoun. Quickly, you got like 1 second.
The McCain people hated it.
Thanks, Andrea. And that's certainly an achievement. It's our own Takeaway political director, Andrea Bernstein, joined by Chicago Public Radio's Ben Calhoun, covering the convention. Thanks to you both.
You can email us at mytake@thetakeaway.org or call us toll-free at 877-8-MYTAKE.
869-8253.
Today's conversation on The Takeaway is supported by Liberty Mutual's Responsibility Project, asking what is responsibility in this day and age? Everybody has their own opinion, discussions, and more at responsibilityproject.com.
You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji from WNYC and PRI, Public Radio International, in collaboration with the BBC World Service, The New York Times, and WGBH Radio Boston.
Good morning on this Friday, August 29th. And John, just to clarify, you can't sing, but you can bring in one of your instruments.
Okay, thank you for that.
Anyhow, if you were up watching Barack Obama's historic speech, what did you take away from it? What are you talking about this morning? What are other people talking about?
Yeah, this is Jack from Brooklyn. I am a lifelong Democrat, and I listened to Obama last night, and I'm just afraid that Obama is going to raise taxes and raise welfare. And I find both of those absolutely unforgivable. So I'm still undecided.
Well, we've heard undecided, we've heard Obama fatigue, and some people who are so excited they could barely contain themselves. Where are you on that continuum? 877-877-8, my take, or my take at thetakeaway.org. And now we're taking a look at Tropical Storm Gustav, which is moving away from Jamaica and heading toward the Cayman Islands. Forecasters say it will start strengthening and could be a major hurricane before it reaches western Cuba tomorrow. That's not good news, as people along the Gulf are observing the third anniversary of Hurricane Katrina. Sandy Rosenthal has been a relentless advocate for efforts to bring attention to the problems with the levees, and she joins us now. Good morning, Sandy.
Good morning.
Of course, we have to start with Tropical Storm Gustav. How are you coping?
Well, it's a good word to use, start with Gustav. The moment I got out of bed, I went straight to the internet, turned on my computer to see where the storm's latest update is. And just to a bit of a relief, it is moving to the west, away from New Orleans. On the other hand, we know that wind is a lesser problem. The biggest problem is storm surge, and so we're very, very concerned right now.
And when you talk about storm surge, this would be because of your great knowledge of the levees in and around New Orleans. How much pressure do you think at this point they could take?
They can't take much pressure. The biggest problem in New Orleans is nothing is preventing water from the Gulf from entering the Industrial Canal, which collapsed so catastrophically 3 years ago. Nothing's there to nothing is built there yet to stop that water, and it's not supposed to be ready until June of 2009. And so that's the biggest concern for all of us right now.
So how prepared is the city at this point? I mean, how would you describe what that is?
Well, we're all getting ready to leave. You speak to anyone as early as Monday of this week, conversation all centered around where are you going for the evacuation, and everyone has a plan.
And it's not just New Orleans in terms of the levee structure. This is something that you've been studying for several years now. It's levees throughout the Gulf. How prepared do you think those communities are?
Well, you know, it's not even just levees throughout the Gulf. It turns out, Dora, that 43% of the American population lives in areas protected by levees. And very few people understand that what really happened in New Orleans or what caused it, and even fewer understand that they, too, could be under a similar or greater threat than what we have here. And that's what levees.org has been working to educate the nation on.
And tell us about this commission. Is that in part why you are really pushing for Congress to hold hearings on what happened in August 2005?
Right. Exactly. The investigation done right after Katrina was done by the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. Now, they are the folks responsible for the performance of the flood protection. And, for example, the shuttle disasters showed the absurdity of having the federal government investigate itself. You have a disaster, you get an outside opinion. But in the case of Katrina, it was the U.S. Army Corps that did their own investigation. Conflict of interest.
But they certainly did acknowledge that mistakes were made, and the Army Corps of Engineers says they've spent hundreds of millions, if not billions, to upgrade the levees in New Orleans. Your response to that?
Well, sure. You said two things. You said they accepted responsibility. No, they did not. They did not accept responsibility. They said, we had a major disaster and we're sorry. That's what they said. Meanwhile, two independent studies conflict with the Army Corps study in 5 of 7 of the major failure mechanisms. And so between the conflict of interest and those conflicts with the other studies, we have a study that was that the Corps is relying on to rebuild the flood protection that is very controversial. And for that reason, we're pushing for a new investigation.
And what would you hope the commission would accomplish?
This new investigation done by people with no stake in the results would render a set of recommendations. For example, they would look at why was the U.S. Army Corps protecting New Orleans using a 1959 definition of a hurricane instead of more updated definitions, and why was the U.S. Army Corps using a flood protection factor, a safety factor in their levees appropriate for cattle and farmland and not people in a major metropolitan city, things like that.
What do you think that the federal government, the Army Corps of Engineers, city, local, and state officials in New Orleans, what has anybody learned from Katrina, do you think?
Well, as we've learned that we can no longer sit back and have 100% faith in the word of the federal government when they come in and say, we are going to, from now on, take care of your levees. You see, New Orleans used to be responsible for their own levees. In 1965, after Hurricane Betsy, the federal government said, from now on, we're going to do your flood protection. And we trusted them, and we found out that that was a mistake. And that is the reason that we consolidated and beefed up the expertise of our local levee boards, because now we realize we can't just trust them.
Mm-hmm.
Most people don't know that the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers designs and builds the levees, and the only
right.
role the locals play is maintenance.
Sandy, what are you going to do after you finish this interview with us?
Well, we released a movie yesterday, and I'm in the middle of getting the word out about our new movie. It was a 10-minute documentary, and it is being shown in 70 homes throughout the nation today. And the purpose of this documentary that we just released
mm-hmm.
is to get the word out about what really happened in New Orleans and that they, too, could be living under a similar threat. There are more people in California
right.
in danger of levee failure than Florida, Texas, and Louisiana combined.
Thank you, Sandy. Sandy Rosenthal is the founder of a New Orleans-based advocacy organization called levees.org. And now we turn to Mark Garrison, who has some headlines for us. Mark?
Thank you, Adora. Plenty of buzz out there, but no firm answers yet on John McCain's running mate. McCain will reveal his choice in just a few hours at a rally in Dayton, Ohio. Fresh reports are out this morning pointing to Alaska Governor Sarah Palin. Earlier speculation pegged Mitt Romney and Minnesota Governor Tim Pawlenty as top picks, but Pawlenty says he will not be at the McCain rally, and media reports are scratching off Romney. Personal incomes plunged last month by 0.7%. That's the biggest drop in almost 3 years and a much sharper decline than analysts expected. The markets are reacting to the news. Wall Street is headed for a lower open today. And Tropical Storm Gustav is tearing toward the Cayman Islands this hour, and it's getting stronger. Forecasters say it could be a dangerous hurricane before the end of today. The storm already killed nearly 70 people in Haiti and the Dominican Republic. It battered Jamaica earlier today, and it's expected to hit western Cuba tomorrow. Gustav could hit the U.S. Gulf Coast after the weekend. New Orleans has evacuation plans ready.
Thanks, Mark.
Thank you.
The Takeaway is supported by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, dedicated to the idea that all people deserve the chance to live a healthy, productive life. Information at gatesfoundation.org. And by the Rockefeller Foundation and its Campaign for American Workers. More at rockfound.org.
The Takeaway is made possible by Liberty Mutual's Responsibility Project, featuring stories of responsible acts that happen every day. Stories to read, share, and respond to available at responsibilityproject.com. Because one responsible act can make an unforgettable difference.
You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji.
Good morning, everybody. Last week, we spoke with the New York Times' David Leonhard about Barack Obama's plan to fix our U.S. economy, and we got more clues on what that program might be in the speech last night in Denver. But today, we thought we'd shift our attention to John McCain and look at his economic policy. McCain's policies, plans fall into a couple of categories. There's McCain the senator and McCain the candidate. Plenty of contradictions there. David Leonhard, thanks for being with us.
Absolutely. Good morning.
How do we distinguish McCain's economic position from Obama's? And we got a lot of information on the Obama side last night.
Well, I think if you want to start with taxes, which is a really good place to start, there are two main differences. The first is which one of them is more fiscally conservative, and the second is who they would deliver tax cuts for. And McCain, as a senator, has actually been quite fiscally conservative. He's opposed a lot of spending, as is famous. He opposed some of President Bush's tax cuts, saying we couldn't cut taxes and pay for war. But McCain, as a candidate, in terms of what he's proposed doing in the White House, is actually less fiscally conservative than Obama. He wants to continue all of Bush's tax cuts, and he has proposed a whole bunch of new tax cuts. And so when you add up the numbers, it seems pretty clear that McCain would add to the deficit. You could think of him more like George W. Bush, who added to the deficit. And Obama, I'm not sure Obama would cut it, as he says, but Obama certainly looks more like Bill Clinton than George W. Bush does. And then the second is sort of how they distribute the tax cuts, and we can talk more about that if you want to.
Let's focus a little more generally for a moment. Economists look at all of these plans and all of these candidates, and, you know, there's a pretty robust discussion of, what the economic future would be or the economic sophistication is in each of these campaigns. What do economists think of John McCain?
Well, that's a little bit tough to answer because, of course, there are economists supporting McCain and economists supporting Obama, and so I wouldn't want to overgeneralize. But making an attempt to do some generalizing, what I would say is that I think most economists really appreciate what McCain has said about trade. McCain is not at really any point demagogued the trade issue. I don't know if you remember the Michigan primary in the Republican.
Yeah,
but you remember Mitt Romney went there and basically said, I'm going to bring these jobs back.
Mm-hmm.
And McCain went and said, I can't promise you I'm going to bring these jobs back. We've got to find new jobs, not old jobs. And most of the candidates in this race have said some things about trade that at times have been a bit silly. Obama certainly did, Hillary Clinton certainly did, and Mitt Romney certainly did. And McCain hasn't. McCain has said basically trade is really not mostly the issue here. And I think economists appreciate that. I think what economists don't appreciate about McCain is that when you look at his budget numbers, they don't add up. And he's claiming that he can do all these different things and still balance the budget. And he just hasn't provided any details on how that would actually happen.
In the beginning, he provided a few details, David. I mean, he talked about getting rid of the alternative minimum tax or vowing to make the income taxation system a little simpler, but it seems as if that may have changed over time.
Well, that's right. So he said on the stump that he's going to get rid of the alternative minimum tax, but then when his advisors have given more details on the plan, it turns out he's not quite getting rid of it. And so he has provided details on some things that he wants to do. But when you put all the details together of what he wants to do, it just doesn't appear that it comes anywhere close to balancing the budget. And along with the details that he's provided, he's also saying, I'm going to balance the budget, and I'm going to do it by cutting spending. And we've just heard that a lot over the years. I'm going to balance the budget by getting rid of wasteful spending and fraud and things like that. And the problem is, it's very nice to say I'm going to get rid of wasteful spending. Obama actually had some similar lines at a couple points in his speech last night. But if you're really going to get rid of wasteful spending, you have to identify specific programs because most bits of wasteful spending have someone out there who likes it. And
right.
You're not going to be able to get rid of it just by pretending it's all something that we can all be in favor of getting
rid of. Well, getting rid of waste is actually a magic wand when people talk fiscally, and candidates do it on both sides of the aisle. Let's talk about the targeting of the tax cuts. Is it true, as Obama said last night, and McCain has made some public statements on, that if you look at the tax cuts of both of them, Obama's are for 95% of the country, middle-class people, and McCain's tax cuts are only for the super-rich?
It's not quite true to that extent. What I would say is that I think there are two things to keep in mind. McCain would cut taxes for everybody. So there is really no one on whom McCain would raise taxes. The Obama people dispute that because they think McCain's health care plan would end up being an effective tax increase. But let's leave that aside for a second. Just talk about classic taxes. McCain would cut taxes for everybody. Obama would only cut taxes for, as he said last night, the bottom 95%. So we're talking about people making somewhere less than $120,000 a year. What's interesting is that for that bottom 95%, Obama would actually cut taxes significantly more than McCain. So for an average family making less than $120,000 a year, Obama would cut taxes about $900 a year. McCain would cut taxes about $200 a year.
All right, I'm going to make you do this quickly. I'm going to get in trouble if you don't. But
get him in trouble, David. No, get him in trouble.
No, Obama said last night that he wants to create jobs by focusing on the green sectors of the economy. Does McCain have a jobs program?
He doesn't call it a jobs program, and it's not nearly as big as Obama's, but McCain has talked about this idea of trying to do some of these green investments in order to spur some innovation.
That's David Leonhardt from our partner in the New York Times. Thank you, David. And now headlines from Mark Garrison.
Thank you. 21 minutes before the hour. Still no word on John McCain's VP pick. He's expected to appear with his choice within a few hours at a rally in Dayton, Ohio. One of the rumored picks, Minnesota Governor Tim Pawlenty, says he's out. The Republican convention opens Monday in the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul. Meanwhile, on the Dem side, Barack Obama and Joe Biden began a bus tour through Midwest swing states today. Last night in Denver, Obama promised if elected, he'll cut taxes for nearly all working-class families, end the war in Iraq, and end America's dependence on Mideast oil. A crowd of 84,000 roared their approval. India and Nepal will work together to deal with the worst flooding in 50 years, which has forced millions of people from their homes on both sides of the border. Bad weather is hampering a huge relief operation in the Indian state of Bihar in the north, where dozens have been killed. Human Rights Watch has published satellite images, which it says confirm widespread torching of ethnic Georgian villages inside the breakaway region of South Ossetia. The group said analysis by UN experts showed the damage was intentional and not the result of armed combat. Personal incomes plunged in July while consumer spending slowed greatly as the impact of billions of dollars in government rebate checks faded. The Commerce Department said this morning that personal incomes fell by 0.7% in July. That is the biggest drop in nearly 3 years and a much bigger decline than what analysts expected. So as we talked about earlier, Obama referenced Eight is Enough in his opening, and we got to hear the people chanting like that. But I personally was a little bit surprised, just given the themes in his speech of creating jobs through technology, alternative energy. I thought he could have chosen something more appropriate, like maybe like Small Wonder or ALF.
A different TV show.
Yeah, like robotics, space exploration could be
ALF
in there with that. Yeah.
What about the Love Boat?
Extraterrestrial life.
That brings back a lot of memories.
Well, that's an interesting question. What candidate, what sitcom goes with what candidate? If Eight is Enough is Barack Obama, what would John McCain be?
Well, he could
Clinton
go with...
would be Love Boat.
And McCain could go with Just the Ten of Us. He adds a couple more to that.
I ought to be very careful about...
The Love Boat.
That one.
Why?
Thank you so much, Mark.
Thank you, Mark.
The Takeaway is made possible by Liberty Mutual's Responsibility Project, encouraging discussion about what it means to do the right thing. ResponsibilityProject.com.
This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry.
And I'm Adora Udoji, and we've been watching Tropical Storm Gustav, which is projected to potentially hit landfall somewhere between Florida and Texas. Some models actually putting it on a path to hit New Orleans this on the third anniversary of Hurricane Katrina. And we've been observing the anniversary all week, talking to people about what happened to them 3 years ago and where things stand today. And so we're turning to Tom Fitzmaurice, a lifelong New Orleans, a restaurant critic and a radio show host, about the comeback of the city's famed culinary scene. Welcome, Tom, but I first got to ask you about Gustav and what your thoughts are. Are you planning to evacuate? I mean, the governor's called... He's called an emergency state of emergency there.
Yeah, well, it could certainly happen, and in the southwest part of the state, if I were living there, I think I would. But we're watching it very closely, and we're not sure.
Okay, so like many people, are going to be watching it closely, and I'm sure you guys there in New Orleans far more than the rest of us.
We're kind of ticklish there.
Kind of ticklish there. Big changes since Katrina hit and between then and now in the restaurant scene. Now, this is such a famous part of New Orleans, your famed culinary arts.
It is famous here even more than it is elsewhere. It's something we really do live for. This is a big, big part of the city. It's at least the equal of our music culture, and it's the thing that we stay here for, because really not too many people are here to make money or because of the enlightened intellectual or political environment. We're here to enjoy the visceral pleasures of food and music, and food is as big as anything. You know, at the New Orleans Jazz Festival every year, there's more food than jazz.
So eat, drink, listen to music, and wait for hurricanes.
We don't wait for them. We know they're coming, so we just kind of think about them in the back of our minds and do what we need to do when it's time.
One interesting thing I saw was reported that actually today there are more restaurants in New Orleans than there were before Katrina. Is that possible, Tom?
It's not only possible, it's true. I've been tracking this since right after the storm. I was evacuated quite a ways away, and my readers kept asking me, you give me a list of restaurants that are open. This was about 2-3 weeks after the storm. And at first I was telling him, you're nuts. The whole city shut down. It's evacuated. There's nothing open. And then after hearing it enough times, I did come up with a list and I put it up. It had 22 restaurants on it, the first one. It was right at the end of September. And I just put it up on my website and I said, here's the list, instead of having to answer this. And I've kept that up ever since. And as of this morning, we're up to 955 real restaurants now, not gas stations with hot dogs or fast food places. But you know,
how has that happened in the midst of a city that's trying to rebuild?
Well, it was the most important thing to a lot of people here. It's what we came back for. If we had come back and we hadn't been able to eat the special food that we eat here, and the food we eat here is really different from anywhere else in the world, mm-hmm. just as any regional cuisine is anywhere, particularly in Europe. If we had not found that here, a lot of people would not have stayed here. They would have stayed where they were evacuated. A lot of people were touch and go. My own family was touch and go on that.
But
my
it was
son
the food.
Never did come back.
It was the food that brought most of your family back. Tom Fitzmaurice, thank you.
Etouffee,
Tom Fitzmaurice,
jambalaya,
restaurant critic,
oysters,
and the host of the Food Show, runs the website NewOrleansMenu.com. He's also the author of a cookbook on New Orleans food.
Today's conversation on The Takeaway is supported by Liberty Mutual's Responsibility Project, a forum for examining the decisions that confront people trying to do the right thing. Discussions and more at responsibilityproject.com.
You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji from Public Radio International and WNYC in collaboration with the BBC World Service, The New York Times, and WGBH Radio Boston.
So I can't get that out of my mind. Sitcoms for candidates. Clinton is
love boat. Thanks to you, though, I would have never thought of it that way. See, this is, you always enlighten my day, John, every day.
Eight is enough. This is Barack Obama. We want to hear from you. 877-8-MY-TAKE. I mean, we'll carry this in.
How about Friends for John McCain?
That's decent.
Friends, he's been decent. In Washington a while. He knows a few people across the country. Maybe there you go.
I got to think of some evil ones. But we got Mark Garrison to bring us up to date on the news.
Non-evil headlines at 12 minutes before the hour. For his 72nd birthday, John McCain is getting a media blitz. All eyes are who's picked to run beside him in his bid for the White House. Lots of names being thrown around, but we'll know for sure soon. McCain will stand with the mystery Veep choice at a noon rally in Dayton, Ohio.
Dukakis would be the gong show.
Well, you know, he talked about another Massachusetts governor.
Yeah, that's right.
So, you never know. Another governor of Minnesota, Tim Pawlenty, says he is not the one. The government says personal income in the states dropped more than half a percentage point last month. To put that in perspective, that's the steepest earnings plunge in 3 years. It's a much bigger drop than analysts predicted. And this morning, the Commerce Department says consumer spending slowed in July. The experts there blame the slowed spending on the tax rebate checks being spent and gone. Georgia has just announced it's severing all diplomatic ties with Russia. The Kremlin recognized independence for two breakaway regions inside Georgia last week. That triggered widespread international condemnation. At least one of those regions, South Ossetia, said today it wants to reunite with Russia.
Carter's the Brady Bunch. Carter's the Brady Bunch, I think.
We've reached tears in Adoji.
Well, the door is a mess over there. But that's
I'm
all right.
Sorry.
It happens every couple of weeks.
The vision of Dukakis sitting on the gong show and getting gonged was just, it overtook me.
That's not bad. All right. Thank you, Mark.
Powerful image.
Thank you, Mark. So our last hit on the convention this long, long political week reminded me, you know, if you go into a high-level political meeting or a fundraiser or what they used to call a smoke-filled room, you can always kind of tell how and why people got there and their connections and who they know, that sort of thing. but in a stadium of more than 80,000 people, like there were last night in Denver, they can't all have some inside connection, or can they? I mean, how did the people in Mile High Stadium come to be there? What are their stories? A mission, surely, for our dear friend Faith Saley, our takeaway correspondent, covering the convention for us. Faith, thanks for joining us.
Sure. Hi.
What was your mission?
Okay, well, let me give you a little background to the mission. You know, I've been talking about going to these swanky parties and getting this privileged access. And it's not because of my press credentials. It's because of my friend Mario. My friend Mario is a former lobbyist and man about town. And so he's been getting me into these things. So yesterday morning began with frantic text messages between me and Mario to try to get me into Mile High Stadium. And, you know, he had to go to 6 different sources to get all these tickets. And he had to promise his sperm to a friend of his who wants to have a baby later. So I started thinking, how do others get in if they don't have a Mario? And as you said, 84,000 people there, right? And the Obama campaign chose this venue because they said, you know, there'd be this significant number of tickets that would go to everyday folks. So the mission, find someone, you know, just one person who got a ticket to Mile High Stadium without having a connection. So takeaway producer Jim Colgan and I set out on this mission, and here's what we found.
We're here because we're fired up, and we have a couple of contacts in the campaign.
He works for XL Energy, and so the company had some, and they had some individual ones, and so here we are.
My daughter-in-law has helped organize the event today.
Sure. My company is a major sponsor of the DNC, First Data.
A friend of mine, her cousin works for Amoco.
Contributor to the campaign.
I was an intern for the Democratic National Convention Host Committee.
I got it through this guy. Yeah.
Faith, we're hearing the voices of the world's largest smoke-filled room.
I was astonished. I couldn't see through the smoke. I was choking. I mean, you would that was not savvy editing either. I mean, no offense, Jim, the producer. It's not like he cut out one person or two people who were like, yeah, we went on to the DNC website and got a ticket. We interviewed dozens of people. Not one person got in without a connection.
Well, on the one hand, it suggests that there's some sort of cynical conspiracy of activists and that, regular people were barred. But it also, possibly demonstrates that the Obama organization is actually so robust that it extends as far as 84,000 people.
It might also suggest that everyone who likes hot dogs and is in a hot dog line has connections, because we really sort of asked people in the hot dog line because there were long lines and we could capture them. But before we get a little breathless with cynicism, I want to tell you this tale of someone who received a ticket without a connection. So
you finally found someone.
I did, and totally by accident. So I was waiting outside. The sun's beating down. I'm at a gate trying to give a ticket to a colleague. And these two African-American women, and probably in their 40s, there's a chair by me that's there for the policeman to sit on. But this woman sits down. She's got long cornrows. She says her name's Monica. She sits down totally out of breath. She has this black T-shirt that says, "We Still Have the Dream" on it, with Martin Luther King Jr. and Mandela and Obama. She said, "You can only get this in Gary, Indiana." So she sits down. She's out of breath. She looks at her friend, who later told me her name was Sharon, and they said, "We made it. We made it." And they kept shaking their heads in bewilderment. And I said, "Well, how did you guys get in?" And Monica said, "I got to tell you, when Obama, got the nomination in June, I don't know anybody in the Democratic Party. I went online, I booked my flight, booked my car, and I knew I was going to be inside this stadium today." And I said, "How did you know?" And she said, "Well, because I asked God to help me in."
So she just arrives. She just arrives with no plan.
Yep. Yep. She and Sharon, her friend who lives in another part of the country, Monica called her and said, "You want to go make history?" So Sharon flies in. They meet. No plan. They get
no
in
Mario.
Line.
No Mario.
No Mario. Exactly. Right. They get in line, and they're in line for hours. And at one point, Monica's overwhelmed with the heat, and she steps out of line and just sits on the side of the road. And she said, this little girl walked up to her and said, "Ma'am, I have your ticket." And I said, Monica, were you asking people for tickets? And she said, no, I wasn't asking people for tickets. And I looked at Sharon. Sharon's shaking her head, and she's like, "That's Sister Monica. She had breast cancer. She can make anything happen because she beat breast cancer." So the little girl says to Monica, "I have your tickets." Monica said, "Oh, come on. Now, do you have a ticket for my friend?" And the little girl points to her mother. She said, "My mom has tickets for both of you." And the woman walks over. She's a delegate, gives them both tickets, and they get in. And I
that's
said
like some
to Monica,
Liberty Mutual story, you know, that we do, you know,
yeah, or touched by an angel. Yeah, and honestly, what Monica said, I mean, her strategy was actually philosophically moving. She said, I believe if you just keep moving forward, you're going to get to the front of the line and receive what you ask for. So I guess you don't need Mario if you have God.
Hope we can believe in. All right, well, take us out then. What were your impressions of this whole event, this whole experience?
It was like a rave without ecstasy, or a rave with American flags instead of glow sticks. I mean, I've never seen
Mrs.
much
Mrs. Saley,
goodwill.
Are you listening? Yeah.
I have never seen so much goodwill in my life at a live event. I mean, I was surrounded by people. By the end of the event, we knew all each other's names. We had each other's emails so we could email each other pictures. People were going out on nacho runs for each other because they'd been there for 6 hours.
So it beats, you know, Live Aid and Farm Aid.
Absolutely. Huggings, you know, wishing each other goodbye, wiping tears from each other's eyes. I was seated by Shanika, and she's a small business owner, and she was telling me how she got there from Kansas. And it was an astonishing event, and I've never been around so many people who got Coke spilled on them and were, you know, brushing up against other people without getting angry. It was really amazing.
Amazing to our correspondent, Faith. Faith Saley is a Takeaway convention correspondent. We've got a team of crack reporters and producers headed to the Republican National Convention in St. Paul. That's next week. Our coverage kicks off bright and early on Monday. And I can't get this sitcom thing out of my head.
I know you can't. I just want to mention one thing, though, to the people who are listening right now,
right,
which is that we still want to hear what your thoughts are on
absolutely
Barack Obama's speech last night. And whether you think it's significant, historical, or not, whether we in the media have made too much of it, give us a call at 877-8-MY-TAKE or MyTAKE at thetakeaway.org. And now you're talking about sitcoms. Let's get back to that.
Sitcoms and candidates. I mean, Giuliani is Hawaii 5-0, I think.
Who is?
Giuliani.
Giuliani.
Hawaii 5-0. And Huckabee is Barney, right?
I'm trying to get the connections. Are these just, is this just free association thinking?
Sort
is that what that is?
Kucinich is Mork and Mindy, I think.
So then who would be like Law and Order?
Ooh, that's a good one. Who would be Law and Order?
Especially in this era of terrorism, war on terrorism, protecting the United States
Thompson,
from terrorism.
Right? Thompson would be Law and Order, maybe?
No, you mean the former Secretary of Health and Human Services?
No. Fred Thompson. He's actually on TV.
Oh, right. Yes, but that's too literal. I think we were thinking more figuratively.
Hillary Clinton, Cagney and Lacey.
There you go.
Perfect. Perfect. Well, you know, we've got lots to talk about next week. Join us. More than 80,000 people came out to the Mile High Stadium to watch Barack Obama's speech. We want your opinion on that.
No, Democrats. Hillary Clinton is a $6 million, the bionic woman.
That's good.
Hillary Clinton.
We have the technology. Now it's the Republicans' turn next week. Join us. It's John McCain's birthday. He's getting some birthday attention.
Today is his birthday.
Yeah. Here's your takeaway.
I was astonished. I couldn't see through the smoke. I was choking.
That's
Takeaway contributor Faith Saley, who reported for us from the convention. And here's one more.
The biggest problem in New Orleans is nothing is preventing water from the Gulf from entering the Industrial Canal, which collapsed so catastrophically 3 years ago.
That was Sandy Rosenthal, a very well-informed woman. She's a founder of the New Orleans-based advocacy organization, Levees.org.
Waiting for Gustav, as all of us will be through the weekend. Have a good weekend. I'm John Hockenberry.
I'm Adora Udoji.
The Takeaway is supported by the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, advancing journalistic excellence in the digital age. More information at knightfoundation.org. The Rockefeller Foundation and its campaign for American workers. More at rockfound.org. And by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. This is The Takeaway,